So from the previous chapter, in chapter 10, and Krishna has told Arjuna about his various opulences. So now in this chapter, Arjuna asks that he can see these opulences, see them. You know, he wants to see the source of these opulences, so the full manifestation of the universal form. So this opens the chapter 11 with Arjuna speaking. Arjuna said, "By my hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has now been dispelled. O lotus-eyed one, I have heard from you in detail about the appearance and disappearance of every living entity and have realized your inexhaustible glories. O greatest of all personalities, O supreme form, though I see you here before me in your actual position as you have described yourself, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation." So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur here mentions that, speaking on behalf of Arjuna, "Because you have said, with a single fragment of myself, I support this entire universe, I have no problem believing this is factual. Still, I want to know everything in detail." So Srila Prabhupada gives her reason for why Arjuna is asking this. Says here, "Now as far as Arjuna is concerned, he says that his illusion is over. This means that Arjuna no longer thinks of Krishna as a mere human being, as a friend of his, but as the source of everything. Arjuna is very enlightened and is glad that he has such a great friend as Krishna. But now he is thinking that although he may accept Krishna as the source of everything, others may not. So in order to establish Krishna's divinity for all, he is requesting Krishna in this chapter to show his universal form. Arjuna wants to see the universal form to set a criterion, for in the future there would be so many impostors who would pose themselves as incarnations of God. The people, therefore, should be careful. One who claims to be Krishna should be prepared to show his universal form to confirm his claim to the people." Then Arjuna continues, text 4. "If you think that I am able to behold your cosmic form, O my Lord, O Master of all mystic power, then kindly show me that unlimited form." So Prabhupada points out here, Arjuna could understand, for a living entity, it is not possible to understand the unlimited infinite. The infinite reveals himself, then it is possible to understand the nature of the infinite by the grace of the infinite. The word Yogeshwar is very significant here, because the Lord has inconceivable power. If he likes, he can reveal himself by his grace, although he is unlimited. Therefore, Arjuna pleads for the inconceivable grace of Krishna. He does not give Krishna orders. Krishna is not obliged to reveal himself unless one surrenders fully in Krishna consciousness and engages in devotional service. So this is a very important point, is that we do not demand anything from Krishna. When we're dealing with Krishna, when we're dealing with the devotees, we're not demanding. We're requesting here. So Arjuna is saying that if you please, if you feel that it is, I am qualified to receive your mercy, then you please reveal. Because he is understanding that not, yes, I can understand this, you know, if you would like to show me, you know, or you would like to tell me. But he understands, he cannot, we as finite cannot understand the infinite. So by Krishna's inconceivable grace, we may be able to understand his unlimited nature. So Arjuna is asking if he is qualified to receive that mercy by which Krishna can reveal his infinite nature, though we are finite. This is Krishna's mystic potency as Yogeshwara. Text 5. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, O son of Pritha, see now my opulences, hundreds and thousands of varied divine and multicolored forms. O best of the Bharatas, see here the different manifestations of Adityas, Vasus, Rudras, Ashwini Kumaras, and all the other demigods. Behold the many wonderful things which no one has ever seen or heard of before. O Arjuna, whatever you wish to see, behold at once in this body of mine. This universal form can show you whatever you now desire to see and whatever you may want to see in the future. Everything moving and non-moving is here completely in one place. So he's going to show now universal form to Krishna Arjuna. And this universal form is something that hasn't been seen by anyone else. Now one may say, well, before this he showed the universal form to Duryodhana. But he did not show such a complete form as what will be shown here. Bhurijan Prabhu gives the story here that because they know Krishna came as the messenger for the Pandavas to say that this war should not happen and give his advice. This is also a family member. That better that this does not happen. But Duryodhana and Karna were not very much interested in Krishna's request. So they arranged for him to... They made some special seat for Krishna. And ideas, he would come and sit in this seat. And then when they move some lever or something, then that seat would then disappear into the earth. They had dug a very deep hole. And then Krishna would go down and they close the hole and then problem finished, right? Because the Pandavas have their strength from Krishna, so Krishna's gone and it's no problem. So then, you know, Krishna comes, he sits down, they pull the lever, Krishna disappears, they close the thing, and then Duryodhana and Karna are very, very happy. They're all laughing and joking and now everything's finished and everything like that. Then they suddenly notice that the floor starts to tremble. Like there's an earthquake or something. And then suddenly through the floor starts breaking up and there's very loud noises and that. And this monstrous peacock feather starts poking its way through the floor. Like this. Until finally then it comes up in Krishna's head, monster's head, and then it comes and he displays this partial form of the universal form. Then Duryodhana is mildly, of course, taken aback by this. Loses all interest to pursue any further, trying to bother the Pandavas, trying to establish himself in the kingdom and the throne and that. And he decides he's just going to give up and go to the forest. You know, that's it. You know, it's like, no, I shouldn't even bother, right? Krishna's not just an ordinary person here, you know, here's God and that. And when God's on their side, I might as well throw in the towel. So then, you know, after Krishna shows all these things, then Duryodhana is depressed like this, and then Karna and Shakuni then trying to inspire him again. Just say, it's just some mystic show, some little mystic potency Krishna has. You shouldn't get worried about this. You just go ahead and fight. You know, some mystics, so many yogis have these mystic tricks, so you know, shouldn't be worried. So then again, Duryodhana came under the illusion of his lust, his desires, and then in this way again took up his desire for the throne and his inimicalness towards the Pandavas. But otherwise for a short time he had decided it wasn't worth it. So here he's only give the word, says here. Prabhupada points out here also the significance of the word ekastam, which means while sitting in one place, you can see everything. Text 8. But you cannot see with your present eyes. Therefore, I give you divine eyes. Behold my mystic opulence. So Prabhupada comments on this in the Bhagavatam 2.124. A pure devotee of the Lord, being unaccustomed to looking at such a mundane, gigantic form of the Lord, requires special vision for the purpose. The Lord therefore favored Arjuna with special vision for looking into his Virat Rup, which is described in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur then he poses some questions about this. He says, why should Arjuna, who directly perceives with his own eyes the sweetness of the Supreme Person, be unable to perceive a partial expansion of the Lord and need to receive divine eyes? Some explain this by saying that these most excellent eyes, which perceive the sweetness of the Supreme Person's human pastimes, are exclusive in their scope of perception. They do not perceive the opulence of the Lord's godlike pastimes. After all, the tongue-tasting crystal sugar cannot simultaneously experience the taste of unrefined gur or sugarcane. And then Prabhupada points out in his purport that this receiving divine eyes is a symptom of Arjuna now advancing. That a pure devotee does not like to see Krishna in any form except his form with two hands. A devotee must see his universal form by his grace, by the Lord's grace, not with the mind, but with spiritual eyes. To see the universal form of Krishna, Arjuna is told not to change his mind, but his vision. The universal form of Krishna is not very important. That will be clear in subsequent verses. Yet because Arjuna wanted to see it, the Lord gives him the particular vision required to see that universal form. Devotees who are correctly situated in a transcendental relationship with Krishna are attracted by loving features, not by a godless display of opulences. The playmates of Krishna, the friends of Krishna, and the parents of Krishna never want Krishna to show his opulences. They are so immersed in pure love that they do not even know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the loving exchange, they forget that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the boys who play with Krishna are all highly pious souls, and after many, many births, they are able to play with Krishna. Such boys do not know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They take him as a personal friend. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, the fact is that the devotee is not concerned with seeing the Vishwarup, the universal form, but Arjuna wanted to see it to substantiate Krishna's statements, so that in the future people could understand that Krishna not only theoretically or philosophically presented himself as the Supreme, but actually presented himself as such to Arjuna. Arjuna must confirm this because Arjuna is the beginning of the Parampara system. Those who are actually interested in understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and who follow in the footsteps of Arjuna, should understand that Krishna not only theoretically presented himself as the Supreme, but actually revealed himself as the Supreme. The Lord gave Arjuna the necessary power to see his universal form, because he knew that Arjuna did not particularly want to see it, as we have already explained. So this point comes out here is that it's not that he became, because it was more advanced, he saw. It's actually the devotee is not going to see with that vision. The pure devotee like Arjuna, when he sees things, it's going to remind him of the pastimes of the two-armed form. It's not going to remind him, as Prabhupada mentions here, is godless display of opulences. It means Krishna himself personally is not manifested there. This is just his opulence. Right? So the opulence without, the devotee is not interested in seeing opulence without Krishna, or Shri without Ram. Right? It means Hanuman was not happy just to see Sita there, and now everything's very nice. He wanted to see that Ram was there with Sita. So the devotee, this is the mood. They're not interested just to see the Shakti, but they want to see Shakti with Shaktiman. Therefore, the most advanced, they're always trying to make arrangements that the internal potency is with Krishna, like that. Some they become, you know, very happy being with, because Krishna's Sarup Shakti is the most wonderful, right? His internal potency is the most wonderful, so they get great happiness being with, in association. But those who are more advanced, they understand that Krishna is going to get the most pleasure, and that will be more pleasing. So they give up their time in this association to try to establish make arrangements so that Krishna can be with Srimati Radharani. So that point is here. So the devotees, when they see something, it reminds them of Krishna. In the beginning, for the materialist or the jnani, then this platform of seeing Krishna in the material energy, then that is the first stage. So it's not that it's a problem. That's naturally the first stage. Is that instead of just seeing material nature, something I can enjoy, we see that actually the reason that it's attractive is God's opulence. What I am attracted to in the material nature, that is God's opulence. Whatever, anything beautiful, anything opulent, anything powerful, anything wonderful. That is Krishna. Whatever we see, if we see something, a very beautiful sunrise or sunset, that beauty is Krishna. That's what we're seeing. It's not the combination of the modes of nature and the sun and the atmosphere and all this. No, it's Krishna has entered. Therefore, it's wonderful. Otherwise, it's not. So that is the point. Because Krishna enters it, it is attractive. So in the beginning, we understand this. This is the platform of Krishna, as already described in the previous chapters. That one brings oneself up through this stage by starting to see, instead of the gross material nature that we're attached to, we become detached from it with this vision, with the vision of understanding Krishna's opulences. But as one advances, like Arjuna, who's already a pure unalloyed devotee, who is seeing the personal form of the Lord, when he sees things, it'll remind him of Krishna. He sees a nice forest, then he'll think of how we were in the forest with Krishna, and he used to come and visit us and all that. And when he sees different things, when the gopis see a tamal tree, they think of Krishna like that. Whenever they see so many things, they see any river, they think it's Jamuna, like that. This is how they'll think. It'll remind them of the pastimes with the two-armed form. So as a beginning stage, to go from seeing the material nature as something separate from Krishna, to actually that Krishna's entered it, and he is what's behind everything wonderful, then that is fine. But once one has come to this platform, like Arjuna, then seeing the just display of opulences, Prabhupada says the godless display of opulences, it's not very attractive. But Prabhupada's pointed out that Arjuna wanted to make it very clear to everyone, because he being the one, as so many impostors who come up and say they're God, and two, as the head of the Sampradaya, he wants to show that Krishna, he actually substantiates what he says. So that all those coming in the line of Arjuna then are very convinced. So as a preacher and as a devotee, he is also very concerned about these things, though he himself is not overly interested. Therefore, he must get the divine eyes. In other words, that vision to see this. He already has the vision to see something else. Right? He already has the vision to see the form of Shyamasundara. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochane na. Only with that eyes covered with the salve of love can you see Krishna. He has those eyes. So they see everything like that. So now he's having to be, he has to see with these eyes that he can see the universal form. So it's a different vision. Right? The jnani may see with his eyes, he doesn't have these eyes. He's got beyond these eyes. But because of his great devotion, Krishna is showing him something that wasn't seen by anyone else. All the other manifestations of the universal form that he showed were all partial. But the one that he showed Arjuna then was as complete as one can see. So then, so now there's the Sanjay starts to describe now what is happening. Sanjaya said, "O King, having spoken thus, the Supreme Lord of all mystic power, the personality of Godhead, displayed his universal form to Arjuna." So Sanjaya also was able to see this form. He was also, by the blessings of Vyasadeva, able to see this. Arjuna saw in that universal form unlimited mouths, unlimited eyes, unlimited wonderful visions. The form was decorated with many celestial ornaments and bore many divine upraised weapons. He wore celestial garlands and garments, and many divine scents were smeared over his body. All was wondrous, brilliant, unlimited, all expanding. Prabhupada describes the word in this verse, aneka, many, showing that Arjuna saw unlimited manifestations distributed throughout the universe. It means whatever there is to see in the universe, any manifestation that is there, is in the universal form. That means everything is there all at once. Whatever there is on this planet that's happening, every living entity, every situation, from very small to very big, every planetary system and all the living entities there, all the different, you know, the whole scenario of the whole system at once. All this is happening all at one time. And you can see this all sitting in one place. So you can imagine it would be a little bit bewildering. Means if at one time you can see everything that's going on everywhere in the universe, past, present, future, all at once, it would be mildly bewildering. So this is what Arjuna is witnessing. Then Sanjay continues, if hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once into the sky, their brilliance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. Sanjay uses this metaphor just so Dhritarashtra gets some idea of how brilliant. Otherwise he's sitting there. Naturally he's thinking, okay, what's going on in this battlefield? And, you know, he wants to hear about his sons and their glories. But here Sanjay is talking about Krishna's glories. And just to give him some idea, he's saying if so many suns at once came up, then how brilliant. Just to give some idea to Dhritarashtra. 13. At that time, Arjuna could see in the universal form of the Lord the unlimited expansions of the universe situated in one place, although divided into many, many thousands. Prabhupada explains the word tatra, there, is very significant. It indicates that both Arjuna and Krishna were sitting on the chariot when Arjuna saw the universal form. Others on the battlefield could not see this form, because Krishna gave the vision only to Arjuna. Arjuna could see in the body of Krishna many thousands of planets. As we learn from Vedic scriptures, there are many universes and many planets. Some of the planets are made of earth, some are made of gold, some are made of jewels, some are very great, some are not so great, etc. Sitting on his chariot, Arjuna could see all these. But no one could understand what was going on between Arjuna and Krishna. So everyone on the battlefield just saw Krishna and Arjuna sitting there in the chariot. So Prabhupada says there, the significance of the word there means then, besides this, then he could see this whole universal form. So Krishna was sitting there, but Arjuna was seeing this universal form. 14. Then bewildered and astonished, his hair standing on end, Arjuna bowed his head to offer obeisances with folded hands, began to pray to the Supreme Lord. So Baladeva Vibhushan explains that Arjuna, in astonishment, now sees the universal form. Astonishment or wonder is one of the secondary rasas. Impelled by Krishna's universal form, Krishna now relishes this rasa. So we see we're starting off here with bewilderment and astonishment, and that will then with time change. Text 15. Arjuna said, my dear Lord Krishna, I see assembled in your body all the demigods and various other living entities. I see Brahma sitting on the lotus flower, as well as Lord Shiva, and all the sages and divine serpents. O Lord of the universe, O universal form, I see in your body many, many arms, bellies, mouths, and eyes, expanding everywhere without limit. I see in you no end, no middle, and no beginning. Your form is difficult to see. It's very interesting here, as you generally note in the Vedic explanations, when they explain something, they generally start from top down. Like you'll see in the scriptures, generally Chaitanya Charitamrita and other places, where it describes the different levels of devotees. Generally, it always starts with Uttam. Then, once you understand that, it comes down to Madhyam. Once you understand that, then to Kanista. But generally you'll find, we'll always explain it the other way, like this. Because the Vedic principle is you start from the principle. And then from the principle you come down into details. So the Uttamadhikari is the standard reality. And then because of conditioning, that becomes applied as less conditioned the Madhyam and more conditioned as the Kanista. So like this, then we see here, Arjuna says, no end, no middle, and no beginning. But we always think beginning, middle, end. That's always because that's the way everything works here. But this is a reflection of the spiritual. So it's coming down. So it works actually is working the other way. We just see beginning, middle, and end. We don't see that in the previous life someone had a particular mentality, and because of that now we have this, right? The mentality before, we think they're born and then their personality manifests with time, but actually the personality that's going to manifest later in their life, you know, when they hit puberty and all that, was already manifest when they left the last body. What they left the last body with, that's what you're going to see when they hit puberty. So before puberty, they're so nice and cute because their full desire to enjoy and control the material nature is not manifest. So we think they're nice, cute, wonderful like that. But once they hit puberty, then the real personality starts to come out. And then many people have difficulty at that point. You know, it's starting to relate to, you know, this person is just, you know, as materialistic and all that as I am. But before that, all innocent, this, that, they don't know so many things. No, it's just that by the modes of nature, they're covered more. The mode of ignorance is more strong on the younger children. So therefore, these aren't there. But when they hit puberty, then passion comes up. Like that. So the point is it started in the last life. Ram Sridhar Nandamaharaj mentioned that. He says, you think it's a cute 5-year-old kid, but just 5 years ago was some dirty old 90-year-old lecherous old man. You know, so, you know, one has to understand, you know, the reality. You know, Krishna just, you know, makes the adjustment like that. So, you know, everyone's thinking, oh, nice, cute little kid, but just, you know, 6 years before it was some 90-year-old guy with all kinds of material desires, and therefore they've taken birth again. Seventeen. Your form is difficult to see because of its glaring effulgence, spread on all sides, like blazing fire or the immeasurable radiance of the sun. Yet I see this glowing from everywhere, adorned with various crowns, clubs, and discs. You are the supreme primeval object. You are the ultimate resting place of all this universe. You are inexhaustible, and you are the oldest. You are the maintainer of the eternal religion, the personality of Godhead. This is my opinion. So in this text he's described it as immeasurable, and now he tries to describe that. Text 19. You are without origin, middle, or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless arms, and the sun and moon are your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance. So now what's being described here is Krishna's Kalarupa, his form of time. Like that. In the beginning he's just showing everything, what's there, and then he starts to show his time element, how he's actually, how he works it, you know. Is that understood? It's like he shows everything that's there, all the different manifestations, all the different personalities that are there, and then he starts to show how time affects that, how time moves everything, because everything is happening by time. When the living entities come into the material world, the ego comes and the time comes. Then the pradhan starts to it turns from pradhan into mahat tattva. That transformation is there because of time has entered. Time has entered, so there's movement, and that movement then the pradhan then interfaces or mixes with the ego, and then that creates it transfers into mahat tattva. Then by influence of time, again. There's interaction with the the pradhan, and then the ego manifests. You mix that again as a catalyst with ego, then you get the intelligence. Mix it again, then you get the mind. Mix it again, then you get this, all the different, the earth, water, fire, air, ether, and all the sense objects, the senses. That all comes when you just, by the time element, that movement creates the mix of ego. Then all these things manifest. So now we're starting to see the Kalarupa. So there we see here the fire blazing from the mouth. Text 20. Although you are one, you are spread throughout the sky and the planets and all spaces between. O Great One, seeing this wondrous and terrible form, all the planetary systems are perturbed. See, before that, he was just tasting, Baladev pointed out, wonder, astonishment or wonder. So he's tasting that rasa. I mean, it's amazing. But now when you see the Kala Rupa, the form of time starting to act, then it loses this kind of wonderfulness, and then you see he calls it terrible after this. Because now it's like, once the Kali starts to happen, then that's when all the problems arise. Everything falls apart. By time, everything is destroyed. Everything. And it says all the planetary systems are perturbed, so the demigods are also able to see what's going on here. All this host of the demigods are surrendering before you and entering into you. Some of them, very much afraid, are offering prayers with folded hands. Hosts of great sages and perfected beings cry all peace. Crying all peace are praying to you by singing the Vedic hymns. So the demigods, they are surrendering because they're worried about themselves and their positions and everything like that, because they have, you know, more material desire. And the sages, then they're saying that there be peace, shanti, swasti, like this. You know, so that all those people who are disturbed won't be disturbed. 22. All the various manifestations of Lord Shiva, the Adityas, the Vasus, the Sadhyas, the Vishvadevas, the two Ashvinis, the Maruts, the forefathers, the Gandharvas, the Yakshas, the Asuras, and the perfected demigods are beholding you in wonder. O mighty armed one, all the planets with their demigods are disturbed as seeing your great form with its many faces, eyes, arms, thighs, legs, and bellies, and your many terrible teeth. And as they are disturbed, so am I. So you can see that his mood is starting to change to fear. O all-pervading Vishnu, seeing you with your many radiant colors touching the sky, your gaping mouths and your great glowing eyes, my mind is perturbed by fear. I can no longer maintain my steadiness or equilibrium of mind. O Lord of worlds, O refuge of the worlds, please be gracious to me. I cannot keep my balance seeing thus your blazing death-like faces and awful teeth. In all directions I am bewildered. So Kala Nala means the fire of death. It's mentioned here to describe the blazing death-like faces, which is the fire of the destruction, because there's always destruction going on at the there's a partial destruction after the cycle of Divya Yuga. Then there's a that's up to the Bhumandala. Then at the end of the Manu, then there's a destruction up to Indra's planets, up to the heavenly planets, so Indra on down, they're destroyed. Then at the end of the day of Brahma, then there's a destruction right up to Satyaloka. So the Maharjana Tapaloka residents, they go up to Satyaloka during this time. So there's constantly destruction going on. So this Kala Nala is this fire of death. It's just constantly destroying. And on the lower planets, that's how they die. They don't die by just a regular death, but when it's time for them to leave their body, then Sudarshan, who is time, who is this Kala Nala, then he comes and kills them. So this is what's going on here. Okay, so now from here, now we see the future occurrences, what's going to happen. Because he said anything you want to see, past, present, and future, is here. So now he's seeing the future. Text 26. All the sons of Dhritarashtra, along with their allied kings, and Bhishma, Drona, Karna, and our chief soldiers also, are rushing into your fearful mouths, and some I see trapped with heads smashed between your teeth. As the many waves of the rivers flow into the ocean, so do all these great warriors enter blazing into your mouths. I see all people rushing full speed into your mouths, as mouths dash to destruction in a blazing fire. So Baladeva Vibhushan describes the significance of these two analogies, these waves of the river flowing into the ocean and maws entering the fire, which depict distinct entrances by different warriors into the blazing mouths. Rivers flow into the oceans naturally, without intentional effort, and maws consciously enter fire and perish. Some of the warriors, by their demoniac behavior, are consciously destroying themselves. They're going against Krishna, going against everything. Others are just fighting because it's their duty as Kshatriyas, and they're So they're like the waves, I mean the waves of the river going into the ocean. It's just they're performing their duty. And like this, very naturally as kings are being killed on the battlefield. But there's others who are, by their demoniac nature, they are specifically trying to go against the Pandavas and go against Krishna's will. So they are like moths going into the fire. Text 30. O Vishnu, I see you devouring all people from all sides with your flaming mouths, covering all the universe with your effulgence. You are manifest with terrible scorching rays. O Lord of Lords, so fierce of form, please tell me who you are. I offer my obeisances unto you. Please be gracious to me. You are the primeval Lord. I want to know about you, for I do not know what your mission is. Then Krishna answers here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, Time I am, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come here to destroy all people. With the exception of you, the Pandavas, all the soldiers here on both sides will be slain. So Srila Prabhupada mentions here, the Lord is saying that even if Arjuna did not fight, every one of them would be destroyed, for that was his plan. If Arjuna stopped fighting, they would die in another way. Death could not be checked, even if he did not fight. In fact, they were already dead. So Krishna once is telling him, he was not going to tell him, that he wants them to fight for him. They're already dead. You'd just be an instrument. 33. Therefore, get up, prepare to fight and win glory. Conquer your enemies and enjoy a flourishing kingdom. They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, Savyasachin, can be but an instrument in the fight. So the Savyasachi means one who can fight with either hand. He's ambidextrous, so he can shoot from one side and then switch the bow to the other, because then he can fight with warriors on either side of his chariot. So those who have a particular, you know, they can shoot with just one hand, then they have to turn around, so that means their time is cut down. And on the battlefield, one doesn't have much time. We can understand the qualities that are here is that someone is shooting an arrow, and you have to be able to, by looking at that arrow, understand what is the weapon. You know, if it is a regular arrow, or if it's a, you know, mountain weapon, or a wind weapon, or a fire weapon, or a water weapon. And you must know what is the power of it. It means power is that they have done on these weapons, they've done japa. So they put so much japa on a particular weapon. That's why they have to touch water before, you know, for Achman, before using these weapons, because these weapons are powered by mantra. So if someone sends an arrow that has 25,000 mantras on it, then you want to send back an arrow that has 25,000. Otherwise, it's a waste of weapons. So if you send one of 50,000 or 100,000, you waste it. So if they send a fire weapon, it's 25,000, then you can calculate that, and you shoot your weapon, that is water weapon, that is 25,000, and then you'll put out that fire weapon. If they send, I think, a wind weapon, then you send a mountain weapon, like this, then there's so many, they have their systems on how it works, so you have to know. So generally, only occasionally, then someone will be, you know, just out of their kshatriya chivalriness and their, you know, show of benevolence and all that, specifically in water weapon. If someone shoots a fire weapon, they might shoot a weapon that's heavier than the fire weapon, and then that extra potency then will... The water then, instead of just putting out the fire, what's extra will then be sprinkled on the battlefield and will cool the battlefield. So it's kind of like they're doing some service for everyone and, you know, doing like this. And then everyone will appreciate, because they know that he had to have sent a stronger weapon to do this. So he did it out of his service. So all the other kshatriyas will appreciate his gift or his service. So to be able to shoot with both hands is very advantageous. So Krishna here calls him Savyasachi, because then that means he can do so much work. He can be such a good instrument, because he can fight with either hand. Others can only fight with one hand. He can fight with two. So how nice of an instrument can he be for Krishna's work? So he's telling him, you get up now and fight. Be an instrument. And Bhurijan points out here, is another point is that he's saying that they've already been put to death by my arrangement. So therefore you fight without pride. Right? Because it's already been done. That's why Krishna makes the point, it'll come up later when Krishna in the last chapters, when Krishna goes back into discussing the Nishkam Karma, but more the Jnana aspect, then this aspect of freedom from ego will be very much told, because we understand I'm not the doer, we're simply the instrument. Krishna's doing, he's the ability in man, he's already said that's one of his opulences. So we shouldn't think we are doing like that. So he's pointing out to Arjuna, it's already been done. So he shows there that Drona, Karna, and Bhishma have already been, they're already entering into the mouths and are being killed, destroyed. So you don't have to worry, they're already finished in this battle. And at the same time, so then it encourages Arjuna that he can go fight and he doesn't have to worry. Because already Kala has killed them. They're already dead. They're already finished. At the same time, is he's pointing out to him that Krishna himself has done this. So now you take part in this pastime. You take part as an instrument. In this way, then it's the Lord's pastimes that take place. Otherwise, just by Krishna's will, he doesn't even have to manifest the universal form. By his will, they are destroyed. And if he doesn't will, they won't be manifest in the first place. Because Garbhodaksha and Karanodaksha Vishnu, then he, by his will, he manifests all these material worlds, and then everything takes place. So for Krishna, this is all very small time. And he says just a fraction of his expansion, he's manifesting. He's through a fraction of the expansion, Paramatma, he's manifested these opulences. So it's nothing for him, no impressive feat. So he makes this point is that without pride, because here he says, Krishna says, Purvam Eva, by previous arrangement, not because of Arjuna's skills. But he wants Arjuna to fight as an instrument. This then becomes Leela. That. Text 34. So this is Krishna continuing speaking. Drona, Bhishma, Jayaratha, Karna, and other great warriors have already been destroyed by me. Therefore kill them and do not be disturbed. Simply fight, and you will vanquish your enemies in the battle. So here Krishna says here, Jeta Asi, because in the Bhagavad Gita in 2.6, chapter 2.6, then he makes this point, I don't know whether it's we'll conquer or be conquered by them or all these things. Here Krishna says, no, you will conquer. Because he wasn't sure, he was bewildered. Whether we'll win, they'll win, he doesn't know. But now Krishna said, you will win. Jeta Asi. And he also mentions, in here he mentions the warriors Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, but now he mentions Jayadratha. Because Jayadratha had a boon that he could stop once the forces of the Pandavas. So Arjuna was a little worried about this, because he doesn't know when that will be used, when it will be applied. If it's applied properly, it can be a great, great disaster. So he's worried about this. So Krishna points out here that he's also been killed, so you don't have to worry. Okay. So Sanjaya speaks again, and he then brings it back to Arjuna's points, 35. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, O King, after hearing these words from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the trembling Arjuna offered obeisances with folded hands again and again. He fearfully spoke to Lord Krishna in a faltering voice as follows. In this verse, then, Arjuna is called Kiriti, because he got this very nice crown that was given to him by Indra. So it was very nice and dazzling and all that. But because, even though he possessed so much opulence and he received this from Indra himself, his own father, still he is very fearful here, showing the greatness of the universal form. But then it's pointed out he's still strong enough to speak. You know, he still has the power, or the, he's valiant enough to speak. 36. Arjuna said, O master of the senses, the world becomes joyful upon hearing your name, and thus everyone becomes attached to you. Although the perfected beings offer you their respectful homage, the demons are afraid, and they flee here and there. All this is rightly done. It's interesting to note here is that everyone becomes attached to Krishna by hearing about him, hearing his name. And then they become joyful. So he's pointing this out. 37. O Great One, greater even than Brahma, you are the original creator. Why then should they not offer their respectful obeisances unto you? O Limitless One, God of gods, refuge of the universe, you are the invincible source, the cause of all causes, transcendental to this material manifestation. You are the original personality of Godhead, the oldest, the ultimate sanctuary of this manifested cosmic world. You are the knower of everything, and you are all that is knowable. You are the supreme refuge above the material modes. O limitless form, this whole cosmic manifestation is pervaded by you. You are air, and you are the supreme controller. You are fire, you are water, and you are the moon. You are Brahma, the first living creature, and you are the great grandfather. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you 1,000 times, and again, and again, and yet again. Obeisance to you from the front, from behind, and from all sides. O unbounded power, you are the master of limitless might. You are all-pervading, and thus you are everything. Thinking of you as my friend, I have rashly addressed you, O Krishna, O Yadava, O my friend, not knowing your glories. Please forgive whatever I may have done in madness or in love. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed. I have dishonored you many times, jesting as we relaxed, lay on the same bed, or sat and ate together, sometimes alone and sometimes in front of many friends. O infallible one, please excuse me for all those offenses. So Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Arjuna is lamenting for his previously being so familiar with Krishna. And he would usually call him by the name Krishna, not as honorific Sri Krishna. And also referring to Krishna as referring to him by the name Krishna, then this is referring to him as the son of Vasudeva, who is just a minister. Right? They were the kings, and Vasudeva was a minister. So that also then would bring out that aspect. Similarly, Arjuna was a member of the royal Pandava dynasty. He would refer to Krishna as Yadava, member of the family unable to rule. So they were under the Kauravas, the Pandavas. And furthermore, Arjuna would sometimes say, "Oh, my friend, as if being condescendingly kind, although I am superior to you, out of my affection I accept you as my friend." Now aware of Krishna's actual position, Arjuna feels ashamed and begs forgiveness. So he's saying he would lay on the same bed, he would sit together, eat together, they would jest while they're sitting, you know, because otherwise you wouldn't do this with someone who you're offering obeisances from the front and the back and from all sides. Someone that you have so much reverence for, as Arjuna is manifesting here in these prayers, you wouldn't do this. So he's begging forgiveness for having done all these things. Text 43. You are the father of the complete cosmic manifestation, of the moving and non-moving. You are its worshipable chief, the supreme spiritual master. No one is equal to you, nor can anyone be one with you. How then could there be anyone greater than you within the three worlds? O Lord of immeasurable power, you are the supreme Lord to be worshipped by every living being. Thus I fall down to offer you my respectful obeisances and ask your mercy. As a father tolerates the impudence of a son, or a friend tolerates the impertinence of a friend, or a wife tolerates the familiarity of her partner, please tolerate the wrongs I may have done you. After seeing this universal form, which I have never seen before, I am gladdened, but at the same time my mind is disturbed with fear. Therefore, please bestow your grace upon me and reveal again your form as the personality of Godhead, O Lord of Lords, O abode of the universe. So, Burijan Prabhu points out here that Arjuna is glad to understand that Krishna is so powerful. He has such a wonderful friend. But at the same time, this fills him with fear. And his interest having been satisfied, now he wants to see Krishna back in his original form. But first, he'll request him to see the forearm form. Text 46. O universal form, O thousand-armed Lord, I wish to see you in your forearm form, with helmeted head, and with club, wheel, conch, and lotus flower in your hands. I long to see you in that form. The Supreme Person... Now Krishna speaks. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Arjuna, happily I have shown you, by my internal potency, the supreme universal form within this material world. No one before you has ever seen this primal form, unlimited and full of glaring effulgence. Yeah. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions on this, he says that Krishna now asks Arjuna a question. My dear Arjuna, at your request, I showed you this partial expansion of mine, the Virat Purush. So why has your mind now become disturbed? And why are you saying to me, please be kind to me, and requesting me to show you my human form? Then Srila Prabhupada mentions in his purport that the universal form seen by Arjuna is different from the one shown to Duryodhana. The form Duryodhana saw displayed neither the same effulgence nor possessed the Kala feature. Otherwise, then, he would have seen everything was finished. And the whole idea was, is Krishna showing this, and he still has the choice. But the point is the pastime will take place. So Duryodhana will be inspired because Shakuni and Karna are who they are. So they will inspire him. But if he had seen the Kala feature and the effulgence, it would have been overwhelming too much. Plus he would have seen time progressing and how the Pandavas would have been sitting on the throne. They would have been destroyed. And it would have been very difficult to convince him otherwise. So for this pastime, then, he only showed him a small. Plus, not being a devotee, it was just something to give them the idea that he is God. Another point pointed out here is that Krishna in chapter 10 says ekam sena stito jagat, just with a small ekamsa he is manifesting this form. So it's not, one should be very clear that this is not something greater than Krishna. Text 28. O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen this universal form of mine. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifices, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penances can I be seen in this form in the material world. So we can see that even though understanding the opulences of the Lord is the purpose of all these different acts of sacrifice. Still, performing them will not give one a vision of the universal form like this. One cannot see. One can understand the opulences are there, but one will not see this form. This is then, Krishna has shown this to Arjuna, and no one has seen this before. 49. You have been perturbed and bewildered by seeing this horrible feature of mine. Now let it be finished. My devotee, be free again from all disturbances. With a peaceful mind, you can now see the form you desire. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was worried about killing Bhishma and Drona, his worshipable grandfather and master. But Krishna said that he need not be afraid of killing his grandfather. When the sons of Dhritarashtra tried to disrobe Draupadi in the assembly of the Kurus, Bhishma and Drona were silent, and for such negligence of duty they should be killed. Krishna showed his universal form to Arjuna just to show him that these people were already killed for their awful, unlawful action. That scene was shown to Arjuna because devotees are always peaceful and they cannot perform such horrible actions. The purpose of the revelation of the universal form was shown. Now Arjuna wanted to see the forearm form, and Krishna showed him. Sanjaya said to Dhritarashtra, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, having spoken thus to Arjuna, displayed his real forearm form and at last showed his two-arm form, thus encouraging the fearful Arjuna." So Krishna Prabhupada explains in the purport. When Krishna appeared as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, he first of all appeared as four-arm Narayana, but when he was requested by his parents, he transformed himself into an ordinary child in appearance. Similarly, Krishna knew that Arjuna was not interested in seeing a four-handed form. But since Arjuna asked to see this four-handed form, Krishna also showed him this form again, and then showed himself in his two-handed form. The word Saumyavapu is very significant. Saumyavapu is a very beautiful form. It is known as the most beautiful form. When he was present, everyone was attracted simply by Krishna's form, and because Krishna is the director of the universe, he just banished the fear of Arjuna, his devotee, and showed him again his beautiful form of Krishna. In the Brahma Samhita 5.38, it is stated, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. Only a person whose eyes are smeared with the ointment of love can see the beautiful form of Sri Krishna. So, when Arjuna thus saw Krishna in his original form, he said, "O Janardana, seeing this human-like form so very beautiful, I am now composed in mind, and I am restored to my original nature." So now he's come back to his original rasa. It's because when there's another form, then Krishna, what is Krishna's relationship with that form? So naturally it will manifest a different rasa. Just like we see that Lakshmi Devi, when she saw Nrisingadev in his Ugra form, then there was no entrance how to serve. How is she going to serve him? She always sits on his lap and sits there and smiles nicely and makes all kinds of nice arrangements for his, you know, eating and other arrangements. But that is not possible. So she's disturbed. She's fearful. So she's seeing a form that she doesn't know how to serve. So that comes. So we see the same principle there manifesting with Arjuna. Is because of his relationship with Krishna, who he has with him in his two-arm form. Then when this was gone, and he's in one of the other forms, then his mind is not peaceful, because how does he serve? And when one is serving, then one is peaceful. The devotee is peaceful when he's performing service. So this aspect of rasa is there. One relates to that particular form of Krishna in which one can serve. Srila Prabhupada pointed out is that, like Arjuna, he understands and sees Krishna everywhere. He doesn't see the universal form everywhere. So here he's being shown. Another point is that, says his original form, Krishna. So these others were, he expanded them and showed them. So the original form is, his two-armed form is Krishna. And then within that form, he has is the four-armed and the universal form. So one should not think it's the other way. So Krishna mentions that those who deride him when he comes in the human form, then they are fools. Then 52. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Arjuna, this form of mine you are now seeing is very difficult to behold. Even the demigods are ever seeking the opportunity to see this form, which is so dear. The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing various penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am." 54. "My dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding." And here a point is being made. The word praveshtum, to enter into, is used in the sense of entering a city. When you enter a city, we don't become the city. But we are able to enter and understand, but we don't become those. We don't become the mysteries. Then 55, "My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contaminations of fruitive activities and mental speculation, he who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me." So then many points are being made here. So Krishna is saying that this form, as Arjuna is seeing, is very difficult to see. The demigods are trying to see. You can't see it by studying the Vedas, by undergoing penances, by giving in charity, by various worship. One cannot see. So it's by this love that one can see. Undivided devotion, undivided devotional service, then one can see. Because that Krishna says, as you surrender, then he reciprocates. So this form that Arjuna is seeing, then is because of Krishna's affection, Arjuna's affection, and Krishna's affection for him. So that reciprocation is going on, therefore he's seeing that form. That is very important. That's why these other methods you cannot see. Because he's seeing directly, he's just standing in front of him, sitting on his chariot with him. So that is because of Arjuna's affection for Krishna, as a friend. Therefore, Krishna comes as his friend and drives his chariot. Then Srila Prabhupada discusses these 5 points here. He brings out, first point is, bhakti must be performed purely, mad bhakta. The devotee must fully engage in 9 processes of devotional service. The only goal is Krishna's service, with no desire for attainments in this world. Like that. So this is free from the... Yeah. Then... Yeah, pure devotional service, that you just want to please Krishna. The only goal is Krishna. That's another point here. The only goal is Krishna. This makes pure devotional service. When your only goal is Krishna, there may be still contamination in the heart, but that still is called pure devotional service. Because it's got his goal as Krishna. Therefore, the whole process is counted as bhakti. But then, more points are added. Second point is, bhakti must be free from karma and jnana. Sangha varjita. A devotee must not associate with persons who are against Krishna, and he should not become attracted to anything but pure devotion. At the same time, a devotee should not be envious of those who are inimical, because the karma of such a person has awarded him that mentality. Devotees should remain disentangled from such a person's karma. Sometimes we find that when we first take up devotional service, then we are very inimical towards those who are not devotees. You know, say they're rascals and nonsense and all this. But why we'll get involved in their karma? Because in their previous activities, they have not wished to understand God or know God, Therefore, they are given an opportunity to not know. So then it's not our business to get involved in that. So when we hear his point is being made, we say free from karma and jnana. This means free from performing in ourselves, free from associating with those who perform it, and free from being envious or inimical towards those who are also involved in it. In other words, we just don't care for karma and jnana because of pure devotional service. You see, the goal is Krishna. Karma means you perform activities for fruit. Jnana means you cultivate knowledge to merge in the Brahman. So neither of them have their goal as Krishna. So they're rejected. But we see Krishna says, work for me. So he doesn't say get rid of karma as working for Krishna. He says get rid of karma as its own work for its own self, its own goal of sense gratification, or jnana for the own purpose of engaging, just wanting to merge in the Brahman. Yes, or yours. And then the third point here is three. The work of bhaktas must be for Krishna. Mad karma krit. A devotee should use his energy fully in Krishna's service while remaining detached from the fruits of his work. So Krishna says here, work for me. So when we come up to that, those shlokas in future chapters, then Prabhupada in the purport mentions that this is where the varnashram system is established. So prescribed duties. Working for Krishna means prescribed duties are there, but we do them for Krishna without attachment. So here he says, one who works for me, or he who works for me, right? Free from contamination of fruit of activities. So this was Arjuna's confusion before, in the first, in the third, fourth, and fifth chapters, is that Krishna says here, free from contamination of fruitive activities. So we think, yes, no fruitive activities, no karma. And then he says, he who works for me. And then he's saying, you work for him. So it seems like a contradiction. But what he's saying is work, but free from the contaminations of fruitive activities. The activities isn't the problem. It's the contamination that they carry that you want the result. Right? So that is the point. This doesn't mean that we now go out and do some karma kanda yajna. No, nobody's prescribed it. One, they're not prescribed for this age. And two, none of our acharyas have said we should do that. So when they mention prescribed duties, they've never mentioned this one. They mentioned so many other ones. You know, like getting up in the morning, taking bath, you know, so many times a day. So these are not in themselves spiritual. These are part of the Vaishnava culture, the Vedic culture. But we follow those. This is our duty. We do them. Right? And Prabhupada is very emphatic about it. He doesn't say, well, because there's a rule and regulation, you do, don't do, doesn't matter. I saw one devotee was relating that he remembers that either he had asked or someone else had asked. They were trying to understand under what situations can you not attend Mangal Arati? And Prabhupada's immediate reply was death. Then you don't have to go. So like that. Point is that Prabhupada is being very, even though they're just rules and regulations, and even though they are just prescribed duties that we would call varnashram and of a lower stature, but still, he's being very strong about these points. So all these different things, many times devotees become too easily, paramahamsas, that they don't bother about the rules and regulations, or the prescribed duties of varnashram. Varnashram's not for us. Right? We're devotees, like that, it's not for us. But the point is, as Krishna's saying here, work for me. And then someone would have to give what is their definition of work for me. So then in the purport to later chapters, in later verses,
And Prabhupada says, this is following the prescribed duties. So like this, one understands how it all fits together very nicely. Like that. So the work of bhaktas should be for Krishna. A devotee should use his energy fully in Krishna's service while remaining detached from the fruits of his work. And the fourth point, Krishna must be the goal of life. Matparama. The devotee should remain unattached to both heavenly and impersonal destinations. So the goal must be Krishna. So not only the fruits, but the goal. See, it's like you may perform the karmakanda, you want the fruits, so you know Krishna is the goal. Right? But that's not what he's saying. Like Dhritarashtra, he knew Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he should be worshipped and respected, but he wanted the fruits of his sons being on the throne. So this kind of mixed activity is not, this is not considered pure devotional service. So pure devotion means you're performing these activities, the goal is Krishna. That's pure. So in this definition, then we would say pure unalloyed means when the desires in the heart are removed completely, then it's pure unalloyed devotional service. But when we have our goal of as Krishna simply, even though we may be conditioned still, that is counted as pure devotional service, because Krishna is the goal, and one is properly situated. So one has to give up the attraction to unattached to the fruits of karma and gyan, but also unattached that one sees them as a goal. But one has to see Krishna as the goal. And so, yeah, this does not mean that one doesn't see that performing one's duties and the resultant activities that come with it, they may be there. Your duty is to work for economic development. So you do that, and so there'll be you'll know that by working then results will come, all this. So those things are there, but that doesn't mean that's your goal. Right? It's just like if I want to take a train from here to Delhi, I'll have to go through Allahabad and Varanasi and Lucknow and so many other places. So I may think, oh, now we've gotten to this place. I know I'm going to go through those places. And when I get to this place, okay, very nice. It just means we're closer to the goal. But we don't get off there. So if we get off there, then that means then we're taking the result. But if we keep going, we know Krishna is the goal, then even going through this process where one rehashta life, one has so many duties to perform and so much facilities and different things come, but one knows this is not the goal. So as they come, fine. And as they go, fine. That's why Krishna says in the second chapter, one who is not elated in happiness or disturbed in distress or in gain and loss. Oh, okay, we're working for economic development with grihasthas. Gain has come. Oh, we're very happy. But if we see it as Krishna's goal, it will also pass. So as it passes, then we're not disturbed. Oh, it's gone. So if we keep Krishna as the goal, then it can come and go as Krishna likes. Otherwise, if we say how we like, we're elated when it comes, that means when it starts to pass, then we become very disturbed. So we get affected by duality. So by performance of prescribed duties, then from dharma naturally comes artha. So whatever is needed, that is what comes. So one sees some people, not by sinful activities, are becoming economically growing, then this is a natural consequence of dharma. But we're not attached to it. So if someone feels that they need to progress more materially, then one has to perform dharma. Then it comes. But one is not attached to it. Right? One is conditioned to it, but one cannot be attached to it. One is used to it, habituated to it, but one cannot be attached. Otherwise, one will suffer as it comes and goes, as Krishna pleases. And the fifth point is, the devotee must be friendly to all. Nirvairaha. He must compassionately desire to give Krishna consciousness to others. Yeah, he says, and who is friendly to every living being, he certainly comes to me. This is also brought out, I think, in relationship to Prahlad Maharaj. Many of the great devotees, at this point is made, is that they're friendly with all others. Krishna brings this point out many times. Is that all this is seen. Now one may say, I'm doing all these things, but if one is not friendly with all living entities, then one hasn't attained actually a very advanced state. One may be doing work, one may feel one is detached, one is keeping Krishna as the goal, but if one can't work with anybody else on the planet, then we can see that our advancement is still not enough. Right? But one has to be able to work in whatever situation. Haridas Thakur was not disturbed. He's sitting in Benapole, and the local zamindar there, this Ramachandra Khan, then he is very inimical towards the Vaishnavas, and he sends this prostitute. He knows all this, what's going on, but he's not disturbed. Right? So he's not inimical to him. So he understands that the prostitute is, how you say, can be delivered. Because she's just working under order. And then he purifies her, makes her into a great devotee. This proves the power of the holy name. So many others in the village become, and in the surrounding area, become benefited by that association. And Ramachandra Khan, and, you know, whoever is close with him, and the main residents of the village there, then they all get disturbed, or destroy all their wealth and everything destroyed because of this offense. So this friendliness to all living entities is very important, because that's what creates the creature. And Krishna, when he says the nine forms of service, then the sakyam, this friendship, then means we understand the Lord's desire. And that means we preach. So we are friendly with all other living entities. So there's sakyam, in other words, a preacher, or someone who is working for the benefit of others. Then this is the point being made here. Okay, you yourself are perfect, now you work for others. Therefore, Haridas Thakur was also considered the best. And Sanatana Goswami says about Haridas Thakur that you are the best of the devotees because not only do you practice, not only you, some preach but don't practice, some practice but don't preach, you do both. So here we see Krishna saying this is the platform that he brings out as most essential, is that you practice yourself and you preach it. Then it becomes very, in the purport to this verse, then it's not mentioned here, Prabhupada makes the point that this verse is the essence of the Gita. Practice what Krishna is saying in the Gita, give it to others. Like that. So this point is the essence. Of course, many verses are mentioned as the essence, but this is because it combines all these things. Performing for proper performance of pure devotional service, as a madhyam, setting example, and preaching. Right? So we see everything's mentioned here. Engage in my pure devotional service, free from contamination of fruit of activities and mental speculation. He who works for me, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and who is friendly to every living being, certainly comes to me. So the perfection of all the instructions is, even on the platform of this pure devotional service, still one performs one's duties to set proper example without desire for any results. And he preaches this to others. He gives this to others. One may say, another point may come up as, well, why friendly? What is, but we see, when Prabhupada would meet people, they would think he's a very nice, wonderful person. They've never met such a nice gentleman, because he would be very pleasant and very nice and very friendly. And this would impress them. Because someone who feels unthreatened, then they also have a tendency to listen and to somehow or another take up the process. But otherwise,
so Bhurijan mentions some points here, and concluding these up to this point, in chapter 7, Krishna described himself as the Supreme Lord, and said that we can see everything in this world as an expansion of his two energies. In chapter 9, Krishna again explained that everything comes from him and should be seen in relationship to him. Krishna concluded chapter 9 by saying that everyone, regardless of birth, should worship him with devotion. In chapter 10, Krishna explained his opulences and said, Aham sarvasya bhavava, mata sarvam pravartate. I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The end of chapter 10, Krishna stated, Ekam sena stito jagat. With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support the entire universe. After explaining this confidential knowledge to Arjuna, Krishna proved his words by displaying his universal form before Arjuna, Sanjaya, and the demigods. Krishna thus established the future criterion for those who claim to be God. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Lord, also showed his universal form at the home of Srivas Thakur. In Srila Prabhupada's purport, he sweetly concludes this chapter. In summary, the universal form of Krishna, which is a temporary manifestation, and the form of time which devours everything, and even the form of Vishnu, four-handed, have all been exhibited by Krishna. Thus Krishna is the origin of all these manifestations. It is not that Krishna is a manifestation of the original Vishwarup or Vishnu. Krishna is the origin of all forms. There are hundreds and thousands of Vishnus. But for a devotee, no form of Krishna is important but the original form. Two-handed Shyamasundar. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that those who are attached to the Shyamasundar form of Krishna in love and devotion can see him always within the heart and cannot see anything else. One should understand, therefore, that the purport of this 11th chapter is that the form of Krishna is essential and supreme. So this important point of establishing Krishna as the form of Krishna is essential and supreme means everything is coming from him. Now, this doesn't mean that when one sees other forms of the Lord, other pastimes or other manifestations, that one can't tolerate seeing these things. No, they just remind you of Krishna. Right? Like that. They say, remind you of the person. When you don't know the person, just like you may go to a big factory and you work at this factory. And when you go to the factory, you think about, you know, I work here and I have people here and the politics here and I get money from here and all this and that. But now let us say we have the person who owns that factory. And then we have some family member or relative. When they see the factory, they don't think anything like that. They simply think of the person who owns the factory. So when the pure devotee sees any other form of Krishna, he just remembers Krishna. Because all forms and all manifestations are coming from Krishna. So is Krishna also in his four-hour form, in the universal form, as Paramatma, as is all the opulences. So like that, then one has no difficulty hearing about them, you know, or discussing about them, because you know it is Krishna, just as Krishna's manifestation in the material world. Like that. That is not the problem. So it's this they always remember. There's that pastime where Krishna manifests, when he disappears from the gopis, and then he manifests his four-armed Narayan form. So all the gopis come up and ask him, have you seen Krishna? Right? And, you know, I don't know, maybe with one or all of his hands he points in some direction, or maybe he points in all directions, whatever, but he's having a good time. But then when Srimati Radharani comes, because of her affection and love as the ashray of pure love for Krishna, he can't maintain that form. So he keeps kind of, he's four-armed form, and then he
then for a moment becomes two arm, then he switches back, and then two arm, and then switches back to forearm, like this, till finally it's, they all understand, well, this is Krishna. So like this, because even seeing the forearm form, the color and the beauty reminds them of Krishna. I mean, if a tamal tree that has a similar color as Krishna can remind the devotees of Krishna, why the forearm form can't? Same color, same yellow dhoti. Right? So many things are there. But he does not manage, he does not reciprocate with you in that way. He reciprocates in awe and reverence. Because he manifests that form, because there's devotees who manifest that mood of surrender to Krishna. So how this devotee surrenders, that way Krishna reciprocates. So because the devotees are in the manifestation of pure love, therefore he manifests as Vraja Krishna. So that is the special thing. That's why Krishna says, not by the Vedas, not by austerity, by anything can you get to know this form. Because it is because Arjuna's affection for Krishna, as a friend, he's seeing this form of Krishna on the battlefield driving his chariot like this. Otherwise, you're not going to see it. Duryodhana is not seeing it. So out of affection, out of love, then one is seeing these forms. So this is what is going on. The whole thing is a manifestation of the exchange between the Lord and the living entities. So in the material world, because they don't accept Krishna, you know, then he also then just deals with them indirectly through the modes of nature. He comes to them as death. They don't accept God, so he comes as death. Like that, a little hard to dispute. Any questions on this? This is the end of this chapter.
Just a comment on my question. Just a comment on what you've spoken. When the gopis are speaking to Krishna also, they said, anyway, we know in your previous verse, when you come chanter, you cured Bali from behind the tree, you're supposed to be a Kshatriya, so we know how grateful you are. When you just inform another birth, you Bali gave so magnanimous, he gave everything he had, and you kicked him down to Patalok, you found him up in the road, you know how kind of true. So although they were describing different forms of Krishna, but still they were focused on that form of Krishna.
And so anything reminds of Krishna. Just the example we discussed before is that the mother, I think probably gives this example. The mother, when she sees anything that belongs to the child, remembers the child. So shoes or some toy or a piece of cloth or, you know, something that they use, it reminds them of the child. So it's not that because it's not directly the child, it doesn't remind them. But that, because then that means all the qualities and all the different manifestations of the things. Plus, one would consider it very strange if you had a mother that she only would listen to things about, you know, when the child's in the house, when she's feeding the child, bathing the child, dressing the child, you know, taking care of the child. She would only talk about those things. And if someone came up and tried to say, oh, you know, did you hear your child out today? He was playing very nicely with the other boy. No, I don't want to hear these things. You know, I only think about my child in the house when I'm feeding and this and that. And someone else comes and says, oh, did you know your child at school today did, you know, this wonderful thing? I don't want to hear all those things. I only hear about my child. I'm so fixed in my child. He will say, this mother's, something's wrong. So therefore, that devotee who says, I don't want to hear about Krishna and Dwarka or this or his positive manifestation, they may feel that they're the most advanced because they don't deal with this lowly thing. But we can understand when it comes to rasa, it's a very miserly, cramped manifestation, very selfish manifestation. Because Krishna has done all these things. Just to ignore them means we're ignoring Krishna. He's done all these things. But if we have that love for him, he will manifest and we can reciprocate with him in his original form.
two-armed form in Vrindavan. Then we can reciprocate with that form. So all other manifestations will remind us of that form. But if we're only going to say, oh, we only remember this, then that means we're neglecting Krishna's... We're not going to like the pastimes. Because like that, then the other gopis and all the others, they know these other things. And you don't want to hear about it. So when the gopis bring up, oh, hey, you did like this and that, then they'll want to cover their ears. No, no, you only talk about Krishna and Radha. It doesn't make sense. It's a concoction. Therefore, they're happy to hear anything. Because it's all that same exchange of rasa is there. Just in Vrindavan, it's just more deep, more intimate, more sweet. But it's the same principle. You know? It's all Krishna. And from one, you think of the other. Like that.
Speaking about how Arjuna was there to reestablish the parampara. He was lost. Why we don't see Arjuna's name in the list? When we get our list of the parampara, we don't see Arjuna's name.
It means there may be lines that are coming down, because this is specifically the lines of the kings. You know, so then it would have gone from Arjuna like that, then it would have gone down to Parikit, down to Janamejaya, like this, but then that line as directly in the kings would be lost. But through the Acharyas, it's connected. So the Siksha line doesn't have to be directly connected. See, Siksha passes because it's traveling through the ether. And as we discussed, I think it was yesterday or the day before, that the power of speech, the power of hearing, the actual sound vibration itself becomes empowered with the chit potency. And the chit potency is also eternal. So the gap in time between Siksha, the Siksha Guru and the Siksha Disciple, there's no problem. There's not a difficulty there. Because you're dealing with the transcendental, and the gap is not a problem. So the instruction is always useful. Therefore, we see in our line, there may be gaps in between. I mean, there's a gap between Narottama and Vishnu, you know, quite a large gap. I think it's about 100 years difference. And I think there's three different persons in between. So the Siksha is no problem for a distance. So Arjuna is there, and then here we have Baladeva and Vishwanath, they're talking about it. And then that is coming down through us. Bhakti Vinod is also writing on this. Bhakti Siddhanta is speaking. Srila Prabhupada gives it to us. So in this way, we are in that line, in his Siksha line. But our specific Gaudiya Siksha line then is coming that particular way that it's listed. But Diksha is different. Diksha has to go from person to person. A living person to another living person. Right? Therefore, in the morning, I mean, when, what's his name? Murari? You know, across the river here?
Sharangataku?
Yeah, Sharangataku. Then Lord Chaitanya told him he had to take one disciple. So he said, okay, the first person I see in the morning, I'll initiate him. So he went down to the river to take his bath, and floating by at that time is a boy who had died by snake bite. And so then, you know, he had said, the first person I see, so here's the first person. Now you can't give diksha to somebody who's dead. Neither can you take diksha from someone who is not present, who is already left. So he has to bring the person back to life. So the boy comes back to life, and then he initiates him. So the diksha connection has to be from living person to living person. But siksha, you can have a gap. Therefore, we can Therefore, Rupa Goswami says you approach the previous acharyas through your acharya with that understanding, but you can approach them. But you have to keep the chastity of seeing their instructions from the instructions of your acharya. And if you don't do that, then one is considered prostitute. And the residents of Vrindavan will not consider you as very serious. Therefore, even if one can somehow or another get to an advanced stage, you know, even one can come to the platform of Swarup City, which is doubtful. But even say one did, one will never get beyond that, because the residents of Vrindavan won't consider you very serious. Because you are not approaching them through your acharya. So such a person to them is not impressive. So basically there's no question that they will get to that stage. Not possible. Because it's only by the grace of the residents of Vrindavan and the Guru that one can get to that platform of Swarup City. So one can't get there. But that's what they see. There was a pastime with, I think, Narahari Sarkar, where then he, in his dream, he saw Lord Chaitanya, the whole Panchatattva, the whole Parampara. And then... hands are so itchy. So then, yes, so he sees Parampara. He comes and offers obeisance to Lord Chaitanya and I think starts offering some prayers. And Lord Chaitanya says, no, I'm not so, you know, Nityananda is my older brother and he's the senior one here. And so then he goes to Nityananda Prabhu and he says, well, Advaita Acharya. And then Advaita, you know, says Gadadhar and Gadadhar Shishrivas and comes to the Goswamis. And like this, it comes down till it gets down to his guru. Then when it gets to his guru, then his guru then takes him back and introduces him to the previous acharya. And they accept him and bless him. And then he goes, then takes him to the next, until they get up to Lord Chaitanya. Then Lord Chaitanya accepted him. So when he tried to go directly, he just said, so he sent him down the Parampara. Then from that it comes up, the Parampara. So that principle is that one has to approach through one's acharya, like that. So from one who is giving the siksha, one has to approach the previous acharyas. But there can be gaps in that. But the diksha has to be direct connection. It just works that way. Because you're dealing with conditioned nature. Conditioned nature means bodies. So one body has to meet the other body. Even though the spiritual master's body may be transcendental, that's another thing. But the point is one body has to meet another body there. But in instructions, it's not. Because it's not restrained by the conditioned nature. They may be spoken in such a way the conditioned nature can appreciate. But it's not hindered by the conditioned nature. Therefore, siksha can function without direct connection. Like that. But diksha can't. Because the only reason for the pancharatrik diksha, as we would call it, you know, the pancha samskar, is that we are conditioned. If we're not conditioned, we do not need pancha samskar. Then like the six Goswamis, they are direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya. Prabhupada uses the word direct. Why? Because they heard instruction from him. Right? Then the person who instructs you is who's given you initiation. The Bhagavad Mark, by hearing from somebody and surrendering to those instructions, that is initiation. But that's Bhagavad Mark, that's Bhagavad Gita. But if one's conditioned, one must follow Pancharatrika, which means diksha. So that means the conditioned body must be initiated by someone else who also has that form. Because that's what we're seeing. Right? And we see, then we're given the worship of God, from this initiation, we're given the worship of God as he comes in his Archa Murti, in a form that we can perceive with our eyes, our conditioned nature. so we can relate. So it's all a package. It's a nice package. And if we understand these principles, then it works very nicely. There's no confusion. If one doesn't, then one can get quite confused about this. Therefore, in our parampara, we have no problems that the main line that we call it is not a diksha line. That doesn't mean that every single person in the line has a diksha line that goes back to Lord Chaitanya. Or at least back to Madhva. Baladeva's diksha line goes back to Madhva. But he's siksha in our line. You know, but each and every one has. Vishwanath, there's a direct diksha line between him and Narottam. But there's three gurus between. And then Narottam, even though he is then Krishna Das and then Jiva, but his diksha guru is Lokanath. So like this, if one wants to take the time, one can find the diksha lines of everybody in our parampara. But that is not as important. As long as it's a bona fide person coming in the line, that's good enough. The siksha is the thing that you're looking for. Right? The caste Goswamis put the emphasis on diksha. Because that's all they have. They don't have instructions. They don't consider instructions important. They consider that you've taken initiation in the bona fide line. And especially in their line. Because they feel they're very special. Right? They have a mundane concept. You know, they're in the Nityananda Vamsa or in the Advaita Vamsa or whatever is the particular diksha line they're in. And they feel they're very special because the blood of the Lord flows in their veins. Right? We're coming in that line. So therefore, we are very special. And that's all they have. That's their only claim to fame. I was even told that in that famous debate between Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the caste Goswamis, the Brahmins, then Bipin Bihari Goswami, who was Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Diksha Guru, he was sitting in the side with the caste Goswamis. So when he was speaking, philosophy-wise, Bipin Bihari was on the other side. So, yeah. Okay. So this is the point. Is that the siksha is what's important. Therefore, in the Kali Yuga, the whole emphasis is on missions and with founder acharyas. So those that make the comments that, you know, institutions and missions aren't important, don't understand Lord Chaitanya's methodology. Don't understand the siksha line. Don't understand the association of devotees. Because we see in any success, any of the preaching, anything that was there for the advancement of the living entities in this age, has always had an institution and always had a founder. Everyone, there's no exception, not one. Not Ramanuja, not Madhva, not Nimbarka, not Vishnu Swami, right? And we know, we understand them in the Lord's plan for introducing Krishna consciousness. Not Shankara. Still to today, they still worship Adi Shankara. It's his teachings. He said that how he dressed, they still dress like that. Even Buddha, who was the first one who came along and started the whole thing, he started the Buddhist thing. And he established how they dress, how they eat, how they beg, how they do everything. And they still do that today, and they still talk about Buddha. Like that. So everything in the Kali Yuga that has been ascent by the order of the Lord, it's a mission. It's just the way it is. All the Kali Yuga things, even the non-Jaina, that was made up. But even in the Western religions, you know, you have Abraham, you know, you have Jesus, you have Muhammad. So, and they set the standards. They say how things are done. So if one understands this principle, one is not bewildered by this. So that makes Prabhupada's founder Acharya, he sets the standards. He is the Siksha Guru. He is the one that everybody else follows that Siksha. Diksha is not the big deal. It's not the big deal at all. The Siksha is the big deal. So in our line, the Siksha Guru gives Diksha. That's the ideal. But if not, then you get Diksha from one Siksha from another. But with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he brought the two back together. Otherwise, many times in the line, they were not. Siksha was one person, Diksha was another, like Jagat. Bhakti Vinod Thakur. His Diksha Guru is Bipin Bihari Goswami, but his Siksha Guru is Jagannath. And then, Gaurav Kishorenath Babaji, his Siksha Guru is Jagannath, and Bhakti Vinod, but his Diksha Guru is, you know, some Mohan Das Babaji or something like that. And he received Babaji from Jagannath. So that's the connection there. But you never hear of him with that other Babaji that he took Babaji from. You always hear of him with Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Jagannath Das Babaji like that. That is... So these principles are then established. So for us, it's the Siksha Guru who gives Diksha for the purpose of giving serious Siksha. That's all. Someone who's taken Diksha means they want serious Siksha. So it's the, you know, it's very natural that it's that same person. But even if it's not, it doesn't matter. The emphasis is on the Siksha. We want Siksha. Right? It means there were other pure devotees in this line that is given. But they were not the main leaders who were giving the thrust to the preaching mission. It means all the names listed, Rupa, then Jiva, Krishnadas, Narottam, Vishwanath, Baladev, Jagannath, Bhakti Vinod, Gaurakishore, then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then Srila Prabhupada. These were the heads, or like the, yes, the heads of the Vishnu Vaishnava Raja Sabha. They were the ones that took the mission and pushed it forward dynamically. So many others are in the line that they understood the essence and they were empowered to do this work. So their names come in the line. So diksha-wise, there's so many are there. That. But for us, it's not a problem. For others, it may be. Yes.
You mentioned that the diksha has to be living person to living person. You also mentioned custody. You also mentioned that the Lord has formed different acharyas, the diksha guru is not so well known. So, how do we see present acharyas in the ISKCON? How do we view it? It's not a political question, I'm interested. How do we see it when they take Gopi Balabh mantra or they take the Guru mantra?
Fortunately, there's a very enthusiastic bell ringing.
How should we see it when they take Gopi Balabh mantra or they take the Srinagar mantra outside of this mantra? But they have initiating, they have disciples.
It means the... It gets very complex because then one has to understand the whole Vedic system of the mantras and the Pancharatra and all this and that. So there's... Technically speaking, there's only one Diksha Guru. But you'll find for the purpose of instruction, there's also what would be called initiations, but they're not initiation as we're calling it. But they're more functioning on the platform of diksha, meaning giving of instruction. It's a very subtle point, just like upanayanam. Upanayanam is not given by the Pancharatri diksha guru. One only has one such guru. But the Upanayana mantra is given by the Siksha Guru. So anyone who's on that platform of Siksha, whether it's on the platform of Sadguru or whether it's below that, so it's a function of the Siksha Guru, Upanayana. Like that. So then, like this, many of the mantras for worship in that also fall into this category. So it's not such a technical difficulty if one understands that culture and can function within that. But if not, then it's better all of it's coming in one place, and it makes life a lot easier. But otherwise, then, just like if one studied the four Vedas, if one got all four from one teacher, one would receive Upanayanam once and learn all four Vedas. But if one learned four Vedas from four different teachers, one would accept Upanayana from each one of them. And even when one studies, let's say, the Dhanurveda, one learns all the astras and all those different kinds of things, because you're dealing with shastra, then they accept this kind of like an Upanayanam ceremony specifically for that. Or even the Stapatis, those who carve the deities in that, they're Shudras. But because they have to deal with the Atharva Veda that describes all the different forms of the deities, they get a thread. But they're not Brahmins. They receive a kind of Upanayanam in which they're connected into that Veda only. So in other words, they're very specific for a very specific purpose. While the Pancharatrik is for taking one back to Godhead, from bringing one from Shraddha up to the platform of Bhava, you know, Sroop Siddhi. That's the purpose of it. So that you only have one, like that. You don't have two. One person does that. But for these specific functions like that, then there may be others involved. But those are not that diksha. They're all functions basically of the siksha. The same.
So then the usual qualification for understanding who is favorable siksha would be taken into consideration.
Yes, so that would be taken into consideration, definitely. Like that. Otherwise, you know, you get mantras from here and there, then it's going to carry the flavor of those people. Like that. So one has to be careful. In other words, it's made very clear. Try to keep everything. One should try to accept. In other words, the diksha and the siksha is coming in the line of the founder acharya. These sidelines. Let's say someone in their house got upanayanam. Their Brahmin family, they got upanayanam. Then they join ISKCON. Then technically, we have no problem with their upanayanam. They go on chanting their Brahma Gayatri and all. We don't care. Right? Because who you get Upanayanam from is not a big deal. As long as they themselves are following properly, coming in the proper line, you know, that they've received it like that. But someone who is not from this background, then they should go through it through the channels how we do it. Because then, technically up to the age of 16, you haven't received Upanayanam, then you're considered fallen. In Brahmin families, the son hasn't received Upanayanam by 16, that's it. He's just a Brahma Bandhu. You know, he cannot be initiated. He cannot get Upanayanam. But because we, by Pancharatrik system, then it changes the body. It's a new birth. Therefore, in this new birth, now, you know, you're younger than 16, so the Upanayanam can come with it. And because of the Pancharatrik, it establishes you on the Brahman platform, then one can receive the Brahma Gayatri. So it's only by the, and that is only happening because we're chanting Hare Krishna. So by the potency of the holy name, then the Namatmaka mantras, the Gayatri mantras, then we get qualified to chant them, and because of this, having attained Brahmitical status, then we're qualified to chant the Brahma Gayatri. That make any sense? So that's how it works for those who are not born with the natural qualities like that. They gain the qualities by the association of devotees chanting the holy name and following the devotional process. Like that. But one has to be very careful about playing around with the systems. If one doesn't understand the difference between them and how they function, one can make a real big mess. No, the diksha, see the point is one accepts diksha for the siksha. See, the point is ideally the diksha guru is going to be the one, it's his duty, technically, to bring you to the point of Sarup Siddhi. Right? He's supposed to develop your attraction for the Lord, he's supposed to give you the right to worship the deity, and he's supposed to bring you to the point of Sarup Siddhi. It means, in other words, the, how you say, that connection. So the real, I mean, that's the second birth there. But the real, you know, I mean, that's the second birth here. But the full manifestation of the second birth is not your body of Krishna, but you realize who you are in your spiritual form. Now, so ideally that person is qualified to give that. That is the best. Because then there's no problem. But if not, if one gets that from a siksha guru, then that is fine. But that's should be approved by the Diksha Guru. The Diksha Guru, the etiquette is the Diksha Guru must approve that this Siksha Guru knows more than me and they should take you further, just like in the case of Shamananda, was it Hridai Chaitanya? So he sent Dukhi Krishna Das to study under Rupa and Jiva. Because they had the, you know, they had the school, they had the facilities, and they had the, you know, they were the senior Vaishnavas in the Gaudiya line. So then he sent them there with this, so that they're going to teach him so many things, and they'll be his instructing spiritual master. But now when he got news that he was wearing a different tilak, and now he was a, you know, in training as a follower of Radharani, when the spiritual master had been training him as a follower of the cowherd boys, then it was he felt the etiquette had been broken. Because he is the Diksha Guru, it's his purpose, right, to train him up to that level of Sarup Siddhi. And he was training him in that. That was his direction. So it's only when Srimati Radharani came and said, don't worry about it, I'm taking care of all these things. Then he said, okay, Rupa and no etiquette was broken. Because it was Radharani herself said, he's one of my wallas, you know, so you don't have to worry about it. Like that. But otherwise, then it's a breach of etiquette. But if that Diksha Guru is not able to explain, or he finds that there's someone else more qualified, then he may recommend that you take shelter of this other person. But that rule is only if he can't take him any further. Right? It's just like you may have your Diksha Guru. There may be other Vaishnavas more advanced than him. But at the present time, your Diksha Guru is more advanced than you. So that means there's still quite a lot he can teach you. So only when you've learned everything he can teach you, and your advancement is going to the point where it's his advancement is not keeping up with yours. It means as he advances, you're advancing quicker. Then he would recommend you to go to another advanced Vaishnava who can take you further.
Or you may be attracted by someone, come and ask for that permission, and then he grants it. So then it says, if that Diksha Guru doesn't grant such a thing, then he could be rejected, because then he's envious of this more advanced Vaishnava and doesn't, and thinks himself as equally advanced or like that. But the point is that's only when you can't gain anything more from him. Then at that point, that decision may come up. But just because there's somebody maybe more advanced than your spiritual master, and you want to learn from that, and you still have plenty to learn from your own Diksha Guru, then if you say, well, he says no, and then I reject him, this is a nonsense, rascal, you know, we will not mention how many bad words there are about such a person. This means this person, the person who does this, the person who recommends it, does not actually understand the Acharya's teachings on this point. They're just making a mess out of the sampradaya, they're making a joke out of the Acharya's instructions. So it's a very fine point. In other words, these points basically can be understood by Madhyam Sanat. And you will generally find that the spiritual master will always be ahead of you at least to that point. You know, it's very rare you find where the spiritual master may stay as a Kanista and the disciple may go beyond. You know, we have example, Narad Muni. His mother was his Padma Pradarsha Guru, which is an expansion of the Siksha Guru. So there's no problem in him going and taking shelter of Narad Muni. A breach of etiquette, because she's a Siksha Guru, not a Diksha Guru. So then Narad initiates him and gives him instruction. So he gives both. Huh?
Dhruva.
What did I say? I said Pallad?
Pallad and Narad.
Yeah, excuse me. Dhruva and Narad. So then, but then later on, when he's been invited to go back to Godhead, he says, well, what about my mother? Because she's my Bhartma Pradarsha Guru. She put me on this path. Then only I was able to come in contact with Narada and all this and attain perfection. So because he had advanced, and she was already, it was like as he's sitting there slowing down the process, like that, she's already in the swan plane, already going. Like that. It would have been he stepped in and she stepped in at the same time. And they would have gone off together, because he's sitting there and going, hey, what about my mother? So she's already gotten in and the plane's already left. And then they point out, don't you see, she's already going. You know, you're the one that's sitting around here. So that's the point, is then anyone who's connected, they go back to Godhead. There's a nice story like this with Ramanuja. I forget who it was. One of his disciples was praying to Bharadvaj. He was a devotee, he could talk to the deity. So then he was talking to Bharadvaj in prayers and that, and he asked that, you know, about, you know, developing his pure love for him and pleasing him like this. And he said, not only will you be perfect and go back to Godhead, but anybody connected with you. So then other disciples heard this, because the deity said it quite loudly. So they ran to Ramanuja and said, hey, you know, Didi's talking to whoever it was, Govinda or somebody like this, and told him this. Ramanuja immediately took off his upper cloth and started throwing it in the air and dancing and all that. They said, what's going on? Why are you so happy? He says, now my going back to Godhead is guaranteed, because I'm connected with him. I'm his Diksha Guru, so I'll also go. Like that. So these points, there's so much fine points in this, because it's all based, again, goes back to relationship. Relationship, rasa, and all these things. Krishna is a person, the most wonderful person. His devotees are the most wonderful people. So the whole relationship is the most wonderful, but it's very fine. Not by study of Veda, not by charity, not by austerity and penance. Can you understand this? It's only by service to Guru and Krishna. Then these things become understood. Otherwise, we can sit down and, you know, crack our head with logical arguments and all that, we'll never get anywhere. It may seem logical, but it doesn't mean that it's reality. So those points are there. So maybe we should stop. Let's see. Don't hear. The royal writ says here that every day at 7:15, then they have some special program. Huh? Ah, yes. Yes. So, Andrew. Srila Prabhupada ki, Bhagavad Gita ki, Samavita Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Tagore thing.